I enjoy a nice glass of wine, but I don't pretend to be an expert in wine. I usually just want a wine that's high quality, delicious, and not too expensive. And to me, that's Bogle Family Vineyards. And here's the thing about Bogle. This is a third generation family-owned winery from California that makes exceptional wines for about 10 bucks a bottle. Bogle wines consistently earn Best Buy designations and high ratings from wine enthusiasts. And let me tell you something. The folks at Wine Enthusiast, they drink a lot of wine. They drink a lot of fancy, expensive wine. And yet they still keep giving great ratings to Bogle. And Bogle Vineyards has so many different kinds of wine. Whatever your mood, whatever you're eating, there's a wine for you. They got this great Pinot Grigio that's crisp and fruity, goes well with spicy foods, with fish. They have a classic Chardonnay that's balanced, amazing with a pork tenderloin or butter chicken. I like to take that Chardonnay and do what Jacques Pepin taught me, a couple of ice cubes in your glass of Bogle. If Jacques Pepin says it's okay, then it's okay. And there's the Bogle Pinot Noir, refined and elegant with bright fruit and about as food-friendly as a red wine can be. You're not going to believe it's only $10. Neither will your friends if you tell them. So pick up a few bottles of Bogle wherever you buy your favorite wines. Please drink responsibly. In 2017, Alexandra Yingst had a problem.
I needed to get to Reykjavik, and I was up here in the West Fjords.
Normally, the drive takes about 6 hours. But this particular day, there was a massive snowstorm.
I didn't feel comfortable driving in the snow, and so a friend drove me all the way down to Reykjavik, and what normally takes 6 hours took many more because we got stuck on a mountain pass in the snow and had to wait for a plow to come dig us out.
After about 10 hours in the car, they finally made it and checked into a hostel. Exhausted, Alexandra sat down at the bar. And next to her was a cheeseburger and fries. Not a cheeseburger and fries that anyone was planning on eating. This thing was on display in a glass case, like a guest of honor.
With a little sign that said, "Hello, I am Mr. Burger." And it had been such an awful day. And I just sat at the bar next to this cheeseburger. And it actually made me feel better. It was just such like a quirky thing. It's so Iceland.
Now, I should add, this was not just any cheeseburger. It was a McDonald's Big Mac. And as you'll hear, it wasn't just any Big Mac. This is The Sporkful. It's not for foodies, it's for eaters. I'm Dan Pashman. Each week on our show, we obsess about food to learn more about people. Now, this week, we're bringing you two stories from our friends at the Atlas Obscura podcast. Atlas Obscura is a celebration of the world's strange, incredible, and wondrous places. Both the stories we're sharing with you today are about old meat. Might sound gross, but just work with me here. Later in the show, we'll take a trip to the world's oldest edible ham in Smithfield, Virginia. It's 120 years old, and that's not even the weirdest thing about it. But this first story is about the last Big Mac in Iceland. And the story it tells us about economics and national identity. Now I'll turn it over to Atlas Obscura host Dylan Thuris to tell us more about Alexandra Yingst and the last Big Mac in Iceland.
Alexandra might be the perfect person to have ended up sitting next to the last Big Mac in Iceland. She's from Pennsylvania, but has lived in Iceland for years and is getting her PhD in anthropology. And she sees the Big Mac as a cultural artifact.
I thought that it was a really great way to talk about how the local and the global interact and the greater significance of McDonald's in Iceland. And so it had one aspect of being like this funny thing that just exists here. And it also had this aspect of being a symbol of Iceland's entrance into the modern world.
Alexandra just so happened to be studying with a professor who had written a lot about McDonald's in Iceland.
My name is Kristi Lofsdóttir, and I'm a professor of anthropology at the University of Iceland.
After Iceland gained independence from Denmark in 1944, the country spent decades trying to establish itself.
Rebuilding its confidence in itself. And just this kind of desire of showing somehow the rest of the world that Iceland, you know, should be recognized as standing on equal footing with powerful European countries.
In the early 90s, Kristin says Iceland was becoming a lot more integrated internationally. It joined the European markets, and the Iceland Stock Exchange had just been established. And it might sound odd to an American who grew up with a McDonald's in every town. But when the Golden Arches show up in a country, it sends a signal that a place has attained a certain economic status, that its residents have enough disposable income to spend on eating out. So when McDonald's opened in Iceland in 1993, it was a big deal. Kristin remembers glowing headlines when news broke that McDonald's would be coming to Iceland.
So much celebration going on. I just remember also just the discussion around me, you know, the excitement for this to take place.
Iceland's prime minister took a photo biting into a burger on opening day. The economy was booming, business was better than ever. And now they had McDonald's. And for the next 15 years, things went pretty well. But then, 2008.
The stock market is now down 21%.
The global financial meltdown comes to Iceland. The government in this
teetering on the edge of bankruptcy. In the last 3 weeks, Iceland has nationalized three top banks. Its currency is in
default. Iceland's banks have debts that add up to much more than the country's entire economy. The government had to rush in to take over many of those banks and ask Russia for a fine.
Iceland was devastated by the crash. One by one, every single national bank failed. People's life savings evaporated. The national currency, the krona, lost half its value. Because of that, and the price of imported ingredients, the price of a Big Mac shot up to $6.36. That's more than $8 in today's money. And at the time, it made it the most expensive Big Mac in the entire world. It became more and more expensive for McDonald's to operate, until it simply couldn't anymore. On Halloween of 2009, all three Icelandic McDonald's closed for good.
I asked people, you know, what they felt about the closing of McDonald's. And it was really kind of interesting because many people, they said, you know, kind of excusing themselves. I don't really like McDonald's hamburgers that much, but it was still so shocking. You know, people saying it really felt like we were nobody anymore. We were just not part of, you know, the modern world. And then, of course, when international media also takes this theme up, you know, comparing Iceland to poor and war-torn countries, it adds like an extra layer of humiliation.
And that was it. No more Happy Meals, no more chicken nuggets, and no more Big Macs. Or so we thought. Three years after McDonald's closed its doors, Jotur Smarason was getting ready to move from Reykjavik to Denmark.
And I was cleaning out my garage. And you know, like it is when you clean out your garages, you find all sorts of stuff. And I remember I found my rollerblades and I noticed that a mouse had chewed on them. So they were damaged. And then I found this bag.
The bag was a McDonald's bag. Back on that fateful day, in 2009, Jotur had stood in line at the last McDonald's location in Reykjavik, waiting to buy a Big Mac. He had two reasons, and neither of them had to do with being hungry. First, the burger was a memento of this strange, surreal time in Iceland. And second, he'd heard a rumor that McDonald's burgers don't rot. This three-year-old burger and fries, sitting on a long-forgotten shelf in Jotur's garage, was the last Big Mac in Iceland.
I was a bit scared to see what was inside and didn't really know what to expect. So I open the bag, I take up the paper box, and what I see inside is a burger that looks like I bought it just 15 minutes ago. You know, if I wouldn't have known better, I would have taken a bite.
Just for fairness, in 2020, McDonald's put out a statement that their burgers seem like they don't decompose, and that is due to a lack of moisture and not some sort of nefarious preservatives. So there's that.
And then I was, of course, I had a bit of a dilemma because I didn't think it made sense to take it to Denmark, but I didn't want to throw it out either because this was like a historical artifact. I mean, this was the last McDonald's, and it was a souvenir from a time that was gone. So I asked myself, well, what do you do with a historical artifact? And of course, I called the National Museum.
And for a year, that's where the burger sat, on display at the National Museum of Iceland, until an expert from Denmark showed up to evaluate the museum's artifacts. And sadly, the Big Mac didn't pass muster. So the museum called Jotter and asked if he wanted his burger back.
Which I absolutely did.
Jotter found the burger a new home, this time at a local hostel. And here is where Alexandra and the burger cross paths on that snowy night back in 2017. At first, McDonald's was the symbol of Iceland's emerging prosperity. Then its absence became a symbol for the country's rapid decline. But 15 years after the financial collapse, Iceland is well on the mend. In the last decade, unemployment has been at an all-time low. The economy's on the upswing, and tourism has absolutely boomed. Iceland is back on its feet, but they still don't have McDonald's. So what does that mean? These days, all the buildings that used to be McDonald's have now reopened as a local Icelandic burger chain called Metro. And it's really a very normal fast food place. A fast food place where you can get chicken, fries, and yes, of course, you can get burgers.
Their equivalent of the Big Mac is called the Heimsburgari, which translates to world burger, but also in Icelandic, that translates to cosmopolitan. And I thought that was funny because it still shows like the burger is, it's global, like it's the world burger. So even though it's not McDonald's anymore, it's still a symbol of inclusion in a larger international community where people eat burgers.
Meanwhile, through it all, the last Big Mac sits stoically under glass, getting a little drier, a little harder, but somehow not any moldier.
It looks great. Looks great for its age.
It looks so good, in fact, that more than a few fries have gone missing over the years. And I am loving it. You can still see the last Big Mac in Iceland, but it's since moved locations. It's no longer on display at the hostel where Alexandra saw it. The burger now resides at a different hostel called the Snotra Hostel in southern Iceland. If you go, please take a picture. Send it to us. We would love to know how the burger's looking. If you want to learn more about the last Big Mac in Iceland, Alexandra wrote a very entertaining article all about it, which you can find at atlasobscura.com.
Coming up after the break, Dylan talks with Atlas Obscura's Sam O'Brien about seeing the world's oldest edible ham.
It felt, to a much lesser degree, like when I was raised Catholic and my youth group went to the Vatican and we saw the Pope go by in his Popemobile. And I was just like, I had this feeling of like this reverence and excitement, and you just like fed off other people around you. And it was like that, but with a ham.
Stick around. Norwegian Cruise Line breaks the boundaries of global cruise travel. When you cruise with NCL, you're going to get award-winning specialty restaurants, a variety of food and beverage offerings, immersive entertainment, and the most thrilling experiences at sea. It is first class. These ships have all kinds of specialty restaurants, Brazilian steakhouse, French, Spanish, Italian, Japanese, Mexican. Select ships also feature alfresco dining on the waterfront and Ocean Boulevard, an oceanside promenade lined with bars and restaurants. Norwegian provides guests with truly authentic and fresh dining and bar experiences complemented by exceptional service. Almost everything you'll eat is prepared from scratch by highly experienced chefs. And they got whatever you're going to be in the mood for. You want a quick casual family meal? They've got that. You want a beautiful four-course feast? They've got that too. And you can sip something delicious at one of up to 23 unique bar and lounge options per ship. Visit and explore exciting destinations around the world and enjoy unique experiences on board. With no set dining and entertainment times and no formal dress codes, you have the flexibility to design your ideal vacation. Book your next adventure at ncl.com. Recently, I went into my closet to try to get a collared shirt out, and it occurred to me that I don't think I have bought a new collared shirt in 5 years. I mean... every shirt in there was either really old or it had some kind of perma-stain situation or it probably never fit right in the first place. I got to freshen up a little bit here. It's time for something new, right? And spring is coming. Now is the time if you've been looking to refresh your wardrobe, home, or skincare and beauty routines this season. Because, you know, Walmart has genuinely surprising style finds that don't break the bank. This spring, there's only one destination for the latest fashion, home, and beauty inspired by real life. Walmart. I freshened up my wardrobe. I got some nice dress shirts, a couple light hoodies. You know, you need light hoodies for the springtime. Very useful, very comfortable. Discover surprisingly stylish new season favorites at Walmart now. Or shop it all on the Walmart app. Go to walmart.com/nowtrending. That's walmart.com/nowtrending. Now trending, your style at Walmart. This episode is brought to you by Merrick Pet Care. We have a dog. Her name is Sasha. She's almost four. She's a standard poodle. She's black and fluffy and soft and very adorable. And when we first got her, we took her to like this puppy kindergarten training class. The whole family went and, you know, they're teaching how to use the treats and all this. The trainer watched Sasha for a bit and said, she's very food motivated. And my daughter Emily turned to me and said, she's a Pashman. And so she is food motivated. And that's why we make a point of feeding Sasha high quality pet food. Founded in Hereford, Texas, Merrick has been crafting high-quality dog food for over 30 years. Real is Merrick's recipe, so they always use deboned meat, fish, or poultry as the number one ingredient. And let me tell you something. When it's dinner time, Sasha is motivated, okay? She is highly motivated to come in from patrolling the backyard at dinner, to get up off the couch, whatever she's doing, she will drop it and come running. Check out Merrick online or in your local pet store and look for their new packaging with real ingredients shown on the bag and inside it. I just got a very wonderful shipment of goodies from the folks at Reese's. And let me tell you something. These people remain the absolute worldwide leaders in bringing together chocolate and peanut butter. Of course, we know the peanut butter cups remain transcendent. But have you tried the Reese's Sticks? They're wafers with peanut butter in between each wafer, all coated in chocolate. I mean, the combination of sweet chocolate and salty peanut butter just brings people joy, and the folks at Reese's do it better than anyone. So shop Reese's Peanut Butter Cups now at a store near you, found wherever candy is sold. Welcome back to The Sporkful. I'm Dan Pashman. And in case you missed the memo, I'm happy to report that variety packs for my new pasta shapes, Vesuvio and Quattrotini, are on sale now. So you can get a six-pack. It's got two Vesuvio, two Quattrotini, and two Cascatelli shipped to your door. It takes a few weeks because these have to be hand-packed. These were not available when the new shapes first went on sale, but they are available now. So get yours at sfoglini.com. That's S-F-O-G-L-I-N-I.com. Okay, back to Dylan Thuris and Sam O'Brien from Atlas Obscura.
Okay, so walk me to the ham. Walk me through. I don't even know where we are.
Yes.
Set some scene. Where we are in the world. What is the place? Walk me in.
So we're in Smithfield, Virginia, which, according to the people of Smithfield, is the ham capital of the world. Hams that come from Smithfield, it's like champagne. You can't call it a Smithfield ham unless it's cured and processed in Smithfield, Virginia.
All right. So
it's the one in the middle.
Yeah, actually.
So I met with Jennifer England. She is the director of the Isle of Wight County Museum and pretty much an expert on all things world's oldest edible ham.
People that come to the museum, it's a roadside attraction, and that's what they want to see. They want to see the world's oldest ham.
And, you know, as soon as you drive up to the museum, the ham is the star. Like, there are photos of the ham outside on like, flags. Enter to see the world's oldest edible ham. And then there's a gift shop. There are postcards with PD cradling his ham. There are keychains with the ham on it. So, yeah, you know, like, even if though you haven't seen it yet, like, everything is, like, preamble to the star of the show. So you walk into the museum, and in a big climate-controlled glass case, there are three hams. One is what they claim to be the world's largest ham. One is just another ham that's pretty old, and then just your average
ham for scale and age comparison. Yeah, okay.
It's just happy to be here. And then in the middle.
And right here in the center of our case is the world's oldest ham.
It's hideous. It's not pretty. It looks like a, some people say like a dried leather handbag. To me, it looks like a dried old corpse. Not that I've seen like a ton in my life, but like in museums when you see like the bog bodies or something like that.
This is a ham mummy. I mean, we're talking about a ham mummy.
That's exactly what it is.
Mummy.
Yes, it's a ham mummy.
Yeah.
But attached to the ham mummy is also a little collar that's in gold, and it says on it, "Pet Ham."
What is? what is happening?
Not video, is it?
No, it's recording. Yeah, audio.
I put on my mustache and my glasses. Okay.
Unless you sound significantly different with the mustache.
No.
I also had the pleasure of meeting an actor who portrays Petey Gwaltney Jr. At events where they celebrate the ham.
And I eventually became, well, not the ham king of the world, but something like that.
That's right.
Where did this ham come from? Like, how did it get made? How did it end up being around for 100 years?
So, just to back up, sort of for anyone who doesn't know the curing process, it basically all goes back to salt and drying something out. So, basically what Gwaltney Foods did is they salted the ham, they removed all the blood, they drained the blood out, and then it just dried. But where it gets interesting is the ham gets lost and misplaced in a warehouse. And so it just sits there for 20 years. And then Petey Gwaltney Jr., who's the head of the company, he discovers it in the 1920s. And he's like, oh, crap, like this ham is still good. Our preservation methods must be phenomenal.
And Petey Gwaltney Jr. said, well, we should use this as a marketing piece. We should, you know, bring it on out. We're going to go ahead and, you know, put a brass collar on it. We'll take it to, you know, trade shows and events. He had it insured and it resided, you know, it toured the world. It went and it lived in a safe in his office.
I like to think of him as like the P.T. Barnum of meat. So he took the ham and he was like, I'm going to bring this to expos and to like sales meetings to show everyone our hams have real staying power. When the Gwaltney Foods Company preserves a ham, it lasts. So that's when he attaches the collar to it that says Pet Ham. That's when he gives it a little leash. And so he starts bringing the ham around, parading it around as this like wonderful symbol of his meat company.
What is he dragging it by the leash or carrying it in his arms like a baby dog? Like I need to understand.
Okay, that's exactly it. Not a baby dog. A baby. So there are photos of this man. He had a whole, PD had an entire photo shoot done. Like, he is so proud of this ham. He's cradling it in his arms like a newborn babe. And he's just staring at the camera like a proud papa. I asked the curator, like, did he have kids? Because it seems like all of his love is being directed at this piece of
this
meat.
This old
and he
ham.
Did. Yes, here's Sarah showing the photos. Look at how proud he is.
He's so proud. This man loves his old ham more than anything else in his life.
Right? And this... you can see the collar. You can see that the leash.
Oh, my God. Yeah. Yeah. Wow. I mean, man, did he love that ham. Was it all marketing? Was it pride in the business? Why did he love this ham as much as he did?
I think it's a little of both. I mean, yeah. it was the family business. And I think there was like a big push too for the local industry to sort of claim pork production as their own. And so Petey was just a big part of that.
I have to ask the question that has to be on everyone's mind. It's certainly on mine. Can you still eat the ham? Is it possible to still eat the ham, or would you, I don't know, die or something?
So it's technically possible. they're actually, microbiologists have weighed in on this because it's that important.
Yeah.
And just, yeah, anything that's preserved like the way this ham was is technically still edible. Although, and I was hinting pretty heavily at this on my visit at the museum with Jennifer, there really is no way you can be 100% sure until someone has tasted it.
That's right. You don't eat your artifacts.
Has anybody ever asked if they could Yeah,
that's the standard joke when folks come in, you know, hey, I brought my fork, I'm ready to sample it. So we get a lot of that. Okay. And then we get a lot of, you know, I didn't think you had the oldest ham. I thought I was the oldest ham.
Okay. You
know, and that's fine, too.
Yeah. There is a rumor going around that every year the curator of the Isle of Wight Museum cleans the climate-controlled container because, like, bits of dried spice and ham sometimes just come off. So they just have to clean both the container and then the ham itself. But the rumor is that the curator tastes the ham when they do that. They said that's not true, but I still would like to be there when they clean it just to campaign for a lick.
Just like, maybe, I don't, do you know how they clean it? Like, what do you mean? Are they scrubbing it? Are they?
So they're not cleaning the ham itself per okay. se. Over the course of the year, the ham sort of releases, shall we say, meat dust. And that meat dust accumulates on the plexiglass itself. So once a year, they go in there and they just clean off all the meat dust that the ham has slowly released over the course of the year.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
So it's not really, it's not going to go bad. It's turning into, like, it's sort of petrifying, maybe, a little bit.
I mean, everyone says, like, it's edible. You wouldn't want to eat it. Like, it's not going to taste delicious. But I let me be the judge of that.
Real question. Here's the question, actually. Given a slice of the world's oldest ham, just a shaving, you know, like you do with Parmesan, a little curl. Would you eat it? Would you eat the world's oldest?
100%.
Yeah, of course. Of course. You gotta try it.
I mean, I'm a pretty reckless eater.
This is true. I know this to be true.
Like a lot of the editors on Gastro Obscura, I get food poisoning like every trip because I'm just like, yeah, I'll eat that.
Yeah, I'll eat that. That's fine.
I'll ask questions later.
I love this about you, Sam. This is one of my favorite things about you.
I would even be satisfied with, while they clean the ham, to just be there because apparently, like, the meat dust that gets kicked up is very pungent.
So the curator said,
like, the person doesn't wear their favorite sweater that day because it just seeps into their clothes. I'm like, that sounds awesome. I would just love to be covered in meat dust. And then when someone asks me what it is, I'd be like, well, that's the world's oldest edible ham you're smelling.
Sam, you're in a very small club of people who would say, I would just love to be covered in meat dust. So, Sam, you've been on the old food beat for AtlasObscura.com for a while. You've written about bog butter. It's kind of ancient butter that's found in swamps and old Victorian cakes. But it seems like maybe the ham has, like, a different thing going on.
Yeah, totally. The ham is more exciting. It's more quirky. Like, the Isle of Wight Museum has really embraced that sort of P.T. Barnum spirit that P.T. Gwaltney was embodying. And the whole community really gets into it, too. Jennifer told me the ham gets Halloween cards, and every year it gets a whole birthday party.
Sometimes people will bring presents, and I think this year somebody sent mustard. He got a couple of birthday cards in the mail that I just thought was hilarious that he...
Wouldn't that tell us the song we sing?
Oh, we sing Hammy Birthday.
Hammy Birthday.
Aww.
We really do.
When is the ham's birthday?
In July. It's always the second Saturday of July.
Happy birthday to you.
They have something called Ham Cam, which is a 24-hour camera that's a live feed of the ham. So you can log on to it day or night and just watch the ham.
Anytime. You can go look at the ham.
You can look at the ham right now. See what it's up to. See who's looking at it. And in fact, the local hotels in Smithfield, instead of do not disturb signs that, you know, you can hang on the doorknob, the do not disturb signs say, do not disturb. I am watching Ham Cam. So it's clear the town totally loves the ham, supports the ham.
Oh, yeah. Big hamiversary coming up.
Exactly.
If there was one thing that you just were, like, most delighted by in this sort of totally bizarre, delightful story, was there anything that really grabbed you?
I mean, what delighted me the most was probably the fact that a few years ago they made a 3D replica of the ham because they wanted to see how much, like, it was shrinking over time. So they were like, all right, let's, for posterity, just get that physical snapshot of the size of the ham. And that's great for science and all. But what I liked about it was it gave me the opportunity to hold the ham, so to speak. I never get starstruck when I'm doing stories because journalism and wanting to be a good reporter. But this was the only time I said, can you please take a photo of me? So I had the curator. And I'm, of course, holding it like a newborn, like cradling.
Love that. You and Petey both share a deep and abiding love for this old ham. I think my favorite thing is, like, it's the leash. Like, there's something about the fact that there's a leash that makes the ham, like, part of the party. Like, it really, like, gives it a life that is just, it's just a delight. It's a strange and wondrous thing, this old ham. Sam, thank you for taking me to Smithfield and to the world's oldest ham. What a wonderful story.
Thank you. Enjoyed talking about it. Special thanks to Jennifer England, the director of the Isle of Wight County Museum, and Albert Burkhard, the actor who portrays Petey Gwaltney Jr.
That, my friends, was two episodes of the Atlas Obscura podcast, a co-production of Atlas Obscura and Witness Docs. You can find it wherever you get your podcasts. They have a lot of great food episodes, so check it out. The Oldest Ham Story was hosted by Sam O'Brien and Dylan Thuris. It was produced by Sarah Wyman and edited by Gianna Palmer, with sound design and mixing by Luce Fleming. The Iceland Big Mac Story was hosted by Dylan Thuris and produced by our pal and sometime producer Johanna Mayer, with sound design by Chris Naka and mixing by Luce Fleming. The Atlas Obscura team includes Doug Baldinger, Camille Stanley, Willis Ryder Arnold, Manolo Morales, Baudelaire Seuss, our own Tracy Samuelson, John Delore, Casey Holford, and Peter Clowney. The Atlas Obscura theme and end credit music is by Sam Tyndall. The Sporkful production team includes me, along with senior producer
Emma Morgenstern
and producer
Andres O'Hara.
Our editor is
Tracy Samuelson.
The show is mixed by
Jared O'Connell.
Music help from Black Label Music. The Sporkful is a production of Stitcher. Our executive producers are Colin Anderson and Nora Ritchie. Until next time, I'm Dan Pashman.
And I'm James Mance from Knoxville, Tennessee, reminding you to eat more, eat better, and eat more better.
Go spread the word. When you get a fresh, hot McCrispy from McDonald's and you can feel the heat coming through the bag, don't try to wait till you get home. Always respect hot chicken. The McCrispy, only at McDonald's. Ba-da-ba-ba-ba.
Hey, Keurig coffee drinkers. Did you know that the bold, smooth taste of Dunkin' cold coffee can be brewed in your Keurig coffee maker and enjoyed at home? Dunkin's cold K-Cup pods were crafted to be brewed hot and enjoyed cold. And of course, they're packed with the Dunkin' flavor you crave. Brew over ice and sip in seconds. Because the home with Dunkin' is where you want to be.